Accession number 12941, Wally Binch, reel 9.
Mr. Binch, reel 9. Now, we were talking about the training you did about mortars, but you did write a song about your machine gun training, which has kept it in your mind all these years.
Yes.
If you'd like to have a bash at singing that one.
Yes, yes. That was, yeah, we trained for a week on the Vickers gun under Sergeant Rice, and we remember it by singing. I've got a Vickers, jolly, jolly Vickers. I've got a Vickers that's made in USA. Our officer's so nice, and so is Sergeant Rice, and we play at soldiers all the day. Up and down we run with the Vickers gun. The fucking rotten tripod weighs a ton. As we go dashing about, you can hear the lads all shout, God bless the old Vickers gun. And that's what we thought about the Vickers. We also remembered about Salerno, and I'll try and remember the words. We did two choruses, really, so I may have to mix them all into one. Something like this. That's Salerno, Salerno, what a joy in Salerno. Jerry there was very, very quick. Half the population hour up the road. We bombed them and shelled them, and they yelled to us, than ours. And if you've got a bike, you can ride all night down where the grapes all grow. That's Salerno, London stones. People there talk like broken gramophones. Jerry there was very, very quick. Half the population hour up the street. We rolled them and shelled them, and they waved to us, than ours. So if you've got a bike, you can ride all night down where the grapes all grow. That's Salerno. The words were slightly different to that, but I just can't remember 50 years later exactly how they went.
They had a rather disrespectful one about King Farouk.
Well, just like all in Cairo and all that, when they did the national, I think it was a national anthem, it was so like, King Farouk, hang your bollocks on a hook, stand a swire, pull your wire, King Farouk, King Farouk. We didn't think much. It was a bit disrespectful, wasn't it, when you think about it?
Right. Were you doing concerts while you were out there?
Yes. In Egypt, we did shows and concerts, you know, anything to pass the time away, because there was no entertainment. We didn't see much of any ENSA or anything like that. Now and then, we had the divisional concert party coming
in. What were they like? What did you think of them?
We thought they were great. I thought they were great. I can even remember Norman Pickering, a comedian amongst them, and but also a dib dance band that we liked as well, yeah.
Were you jealous at all? Would you have liked to?
I'd have loved to have gone in it, but at the same time, I don't think I would have asked to have gone in it. I think I would have preferred to stay with the battalion, you know.
So you made no effort to get into it?
Made no effort. No,
were you good enough, do you think? I mean, you were a professional later on in life. Do you think you were good enough then to get in the divisional party?
We thought we were. We thought we were nothing like us. You know, we thought we were brilliant, but we didn't really want to. We liked the divisional concert party, but with no desire to really join it, yeah, at that stage.
Now, you weren't there long before you went to Palestine.
Yes.
What were you doing there? Whereabouts exactly?
In Palestine, mainly we were sometimes helping, when I say we, I'm talking about the battalion now, sometimes helping the battalion, the police, Palestine police, in tracking down the Stern gang whenever there was a sighting of anything.
Did that involve you as a anti-tank, because you were anti-tank?
No, that didn't involve me personally. What did involve me personally? Being on curfew duty. This was quite a few nights, walking around the shops around Haifa and making sure that there was nobody about. The Jewish kids used to throw stones at us, just like the Irish kids do now in Ireland. So, and I often thought to myself, well, if this is what the police do, I wouldn't like a Bobby's job, staying up all night, you know. Naturally, we found one or two empty shops that the doors gave way, and we pinched a few oranges and things like that. But apart from that,
did you understand what was going on between the Arab and Jewish populations? And
no, we didn't understand at all. We just knew that the Jews and Arabs.
Did you take any sides yourself?
No. Although, if I had taken sides, I would have been against the Arabs. I wouldn't say for the Jews. Although we'd got a Jewish lad in our lot, and I had known him quite a long while, and suddenly it came out he was a Jew, and I just didn't see any difference between him and anybody else. You know? So I had no idea what any...
Was there any actual trouble while you were there? I mean, while you were on curfew duty or anything? Any incidents that happened?
Nothing major that I recall, no. Nothing. We just kept the peace there, and the kids threw stones at us, things like that. We just imposed the curfew, and then we slept all the day in tents on the hillside. Remember that?
Yeah. And that was...
And then we did curfew duty at night.
And whereabouts exactly was that? That was...
That would be... I think it was Camp 21, or...
You're not quite sure whether that was there or Egypt, yeah.
But it was definitely on the hillside, just outside, would it be Haifa? I think it would be, yes.
Haifa is a big base. And you also went to Syria, I believe.
Yes, we went on as far as Syria, and we all had a photograph taken at Damascus on a certain bridge. Some people had the opportunity to go to the to Jerusalem and see the Dead Sea.
Now, while you're in Syria, there was a bit of a talking about photographs. There was a photograph turned up on a propaganda leaflet.
Oh yes,
that was
that's right.
That says these British soldiers in Italy, whilst resting out of the fighting areas, take the opportunity of doing a little washing. And there's a picture of you and some of your the rest of the anti-tank platoon, and you playing your ukulele, I think.
That's right, yes. Well, earlier in Italy, a photographer had come round and was taking pictures. I thought at the time it was a movie film, so I got the ukulele, I'm plonking away singing some of our songs, and he's taking pictures, and I thought, oh, this is going to be on the films. But that was the last we heard of it. And then suddenly one day we're in the Kit Kat bar in Syria, and having a drink and that, and one of my mates said, look behind you, Wally, and on an army educational poster was my photograph, and written, as you say, in English, Arabic and French about us. So I scrounged that photograph, and I've still got it today. It's one of my prized possessions, to think I'd be written up in three languages. And that photograph, strangely enough, has turned up in all sorts of places. It turned up in Nottingham, in the Evening Post. After the war, somebody saw it in the Imperial War Museum. The division brought out a little pamphlet, and my photograph, that same photograph, was on that as well. So it's certainly gone the rounds.
And anything else about your time there?
There's just about one other thing, besides the eternal blankoing and things that we did there and the training. I remember I fainted for a third time. This time I was in the queue for Connor food, and I hadn't got a hat on, and suddenly boing, out I went again. So that was me third time I'd fainted.
That was sunstroke then?
That was sunstroke this time. The first one had been car fumes from the engine of the Gordon Lloyd. Second, I'd had my paralysed arm knocked, and the third time it was sunstroke. I think that was the last time as well.
You mentioned a lot of blankoing. Well, was there a lot of bull coming
yes,
in?
Yes, quite a lot. And what we did, we couldn't get blankoing powder. What we did, we used the dust from the roads, which was white. All the dust on the roads was white. And we just blankoed that into our equipment. So our equipment was sort of, instead of being khaki green, it was white. And our belts were white, and we'd polish up our buckles and all that. That all had to be dulled down again when we eventually left for Italy. Again.
What did you think of that type of bull? I mean, you were fighting soldiers now. Did you see the point in it?
We didn't at the time, I don't think. No, I think we resented it, but I know it's been dimmed into us ever since that's what it's all about. Yeah, and that's the way to make you obey orders. But I don't think we ever really accepted that.
Anything else about your time out there?
No, I don't think so. No, I think from then the next thing I remember is that we were on the boat and we're going to we're either Naples or Taranto. I've never been quite certain in mind where we were, and I think am I thinking now? This may have been our 21st birthday.
That would be, yeah, June 29th, 30, yours and Eddie's.
Mine and Eddie's, yes. And we celebrated that. We were on board ship and we celebrated that by doing a show for whoever was on the ship with us. I do remember that. We were at sea and we, our 21st birthday was spent entertaining again. And then we started to make our way up Italy. The next thing I remember is we put on a show at Guelda Catania, and we've got all the photographs of that show because the medical officer took photographs of that.
And what acts were on that night? Do you remember? Because your show was developing by now, wasn't it? I mean, it was getting bigger.
Right, yes.
So would most of the battalion come along to that?
All the battalions saw that one, yes, but on separate nights. We did it probably three or four nights, so we're becoming quite professional now, that sort of thing.
You were now almost... were you recognised as a battalion's concert party? Informal, but...
Informally, yes, because, I mean, the CO gave permission for it to happen, so...
Were there any other concert parties in your battalion?
No.
So you were...
Just the one.
What
there
was...
We were the one and only, yes. We got everything there was to go like. I remember we put on there, we put Little Nell on, you know, we did a performance of Little Nell. Robbo was the illegitimate son of Nelly, and Sergeant Mackay was the squire, and Lieutenant Oliver was the hero. He was a fine upstanding young lad, still, he's now a major, still comes to the dues. Johnny Wright, the MT officer, was the villain because he got a big black moustache, rather swooping moustache. Phil Plowart played the accordion. Riccio, who later, yes, he was later killed on a mine, I think. No, I've got it wrong. Chick Sells, who was later blown up on a mine, he did a darky act. And we did cowboy songs, we did the Hallett and Binch routines, and whatever we could do at that time. I just can't remember all the details. Yeah. It was about this time that we started, we made up the song called Those Two Muckers, Hallett and Binch. We usually sang it together, but I'll have a go at trying to do it on my own. And I know we sang it there at Guelda Catania. Something like this. Now we're just a pair of devil-may-cares, two strapping great big chaps. My name it is Hallett, he was christened with a mallet. Yes, and Mrs. Binch, one Binchy in the clinch. We met and ever since, where there's Hallett, you'll always find with Binch. We're a sensation, talk of all the nation, those two muckers, Hallett and Binch. We met her, charming senorita. She said to love you I can never, then kiss us goodbye forever. That night, as she retired, she locked her bedroom door. She started to undress and timidly she looked round. Said, thank God I am rid of them, for they're homeward bound. But when she pulled the bedclothes back, now guess what she found? Why, those two muckers, Hallett and Binch. Sensation, talk of all the nation, those two muckers, Hallett and Binch. One woman, she was a Roman, said you like to dilly-dally, Binch was there and so was Hallett. But then the sirens blew out, in the shelter we all went. It was dark inside and so we cuddled up tight, but in the confusion we had our fun all right. And when two little lads were born, who did they look like? Colonel Welshman and Hallett and Binch. Colonel Welshman gave a girl a bracelet so nice, Major Odd gave her a coat of such a great price, but who gave her those big black circles under her eyes? Well, it wasn't Hallett, and it wasn't Binch. Mm-mm. Sergeant Plowright. Ah, la 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 la. It went well at the time.
So what happened after that concert?
Well, after Guelda Catania, the next thing that sticks in my mind is the fact that we were inspected by the King again. The King came to visit us, and I remember we were all lying on these dusty roads. Water was rationed, the water carts came round, spraying the roads with water, and then the MPs, and we booed them as they came through, and then the King came, and we cheered him, and we all felt happier when the King had been. And then after that, it was the start of the moving towards the Gothic line. I was by now a dispatch rider, still with the anti-tank platoon, and with S Company. And my recollection is we started off by going over some long, low river. It was about 4 inches deep. I have a feeling it's called the Mitura, the River Mitura. It was just before we started going towards the Gothic line. And then we seemed to be moving always onwards. The lads in front, we went to Monte Fabbri. We went up to Monte Vecchie, which I now understand is called Belvedere Faliense. And when we got up there, we couldn't believe the sight, the view of the surrounding countryside. And I'm not certain whether it was at that actual place we were told to get rid of two dead Germans, and there was a big crack in the road in the village street there, and we just pushed them into the crack. So whether they were eventually fixed out or not, I don't know. But we were a bit callous at that time, unfeeling, and that's what we did there. It was all mountainous country, and once again, there didn't seem to be a role for the anti-tank platoon. So I, as a member of the anti-tank and S Company, I was, once again, we were doing portering duties. And I remember that there seemed to be endless these nights, carrying stuff up and to the lads in the line. And then one day, somehow or other, I found I was the CO's Dunnar. Why, I don't know. But I was made the CO's Dunnar. And that meant I came in contact with the colonel and his driver, Johnny Coles, and his batman, Arthur Sparks, and we were sort of a little unit on our own, and wherever the colonel went...
Now, this is a different colonel, I mean...
Yes, this is Colonel Welshman. Colonel Eric Hefford was wounded at the Volturno, and he wrote up an account of it, but we never saw Colonel Hefford again. After the Volturno, Colonel Welshman took command.
And what was he like?
A bit like a father figure. It seemed a little... It was, I wouldn't say portly, but bonnier, a plumper sort of chap. He seemed to be a gentler sort of chap than Eric Hefford. That's the way he came across. And
what sort of duties would you be doing as his Dunnar? I mean, what do you remember any of the things you did?
Well, I remember that if he thought he couldn't get the Jeep up anywhere, or if the Jeep was being used for something... he would go on the back of me. I would take him on the pillion seat, and we'd go wherever I got to take him. Sometimes he'd be trying to read a map. I distinctly remember that at one time, it must have been very cold weather, because the tanks had made some ruts in the countryside there where we were travelling across, and they'd frozen over, and the bottom of my motorbike kept cracking on, and I kept grinding to a halt, and keep out of those ruts, Binch, you'd say. And under the engine noise, I'd say, marks. But we kept going. And I remember also I'd got a big boil at the back of my neck. And when the colonel sat at the back, he was looking straight at this boil. And he kept telling me to go sick. But I just put bandages on. And I didn't want to go sick. I was enjoying this job with the colonel. I suppose I like to think, I'd come on in the world. I was the colonel's Dunnar.
So you gave him a lift. But what about actually running messages for him? Or would he just use his signals?
Well, no, I also took messages here, there and everywhere. I can remember going to places and in the biting rain, and the bike breaking down because it got wet through, and I was practically in tears and all the bloody thing and all that sort of thing. All part of the job, I suppose. I do remember also, I saw other sides of the colonel. I'd be with the colonel in some place, and a message would come through to him, "We can't get through, sir." And I'd hear him say, "Well, you've got to get on regardless. You must press on. Well, we can't get through." So, "Well, bloody well, get through. You've got to get through." You know, and I used to think, well, a rotten sod. you know, sending them poor buggers to the desk. They can't get through, but they've got to get through. And I saw that side of what being a colonel meant.
Did you have any sympathy for the sort of pressure he must be under when that sort of thing happened? Or did you just think...
Oh. At that time, I didn't. I thought, oh, you're a rotten bleeder. Yeah. Well, I was thinking of the other lads, you see. I suppose I was thinking the part of not the part of the commander, no. Odd incidents that I remember whilst I was a Sierra's Donar. We were in a villa somewhere. It was BHQ. And I was in a slip trench just at the edge by a gate, along with Tom Jarman and somebody else. I'd got my motorbike there, and I put the motorbike at the edge of the ditch, the slip trench, and I got out to do something. As I got out, a mortar shell landed practically in the slip trench. I, along with others, dragged out Tom Jarman, and brought him to the centre of the yard, and it was wheezing and breathing, and we couldn't do anything for him. Nobody could help him, and he was just dying. And he lasted 2 or 3 minutes or so, and he just died. And I thought, poor old Tom. And I walked round the back of the building, and who should I bump into but Tom Jarman? I said, well, who? I thought we just pulled you out. I thought that was you, dead. And it turned out to be, he did tell me his name later, but it wasn't Tom anyway. Thank God for that.
Did he look like him or something, or was he just too mangled?
He was just all blown up, you know. I just thought it was Tom. Yeah, I mean, when you're in that state, all blown up and that, all horrible smell about it and all that. So, anyway, it wasn't Tom. Thank goodness for that. And the other casualty I saw was later on, sometime, just around about the time, one day, they brought Bernard Jukes in, and he'd been killed. He'd been hit in the back of the head.
Now, he was your old anti-tank gun.
That's right. Corporal Jukes, who'd now been made a Lance Sergeant, and he was serving now as infantry. And he got killed in the back of the head. But they did say that they got the guy that did that. One of the other anti-tank platoon lads said, well, we got him. Also, then one day, somebody said, your mucker's had it, Eddie Hallett. And Eddie had been wounded. And remember that we'd been to the fortune tellers, and every time we went near any action, we kept thinking, is this going to be it? I kept thinking, well, is this where I'm going to lose my leg? But it turned out to be Eddie that got wounded. And can't remember now whether it was a leg or his arm. But luckily, it wasn't too bad. But at the time, all they told me was he's had it. I thought, and I remember crying about that because I thought, oh dear, I've lost my mucker.
How long did he go away for? Not long, from the sound of...
I can't remember. I can't just remember exactly just where that was. It was sometime after in the Gothic line, but just where.
So you weren't playing any part... The reason we're not going through sort of battles and valleys and things is that for you, that wasn't the way it was. Your job wasn't fighting at the moment.
No.
Your job was donarring the colonel.
For the colonel, that's
and,
right.
And so you can't remember the actual backwards and forwards of fighting at this time.
No, that's right, yeah. No, all I remember is that part, that, as I say, with the colonel. I'm just trying to think now what happened after that. So, eventually we came out the line and we went back to a place that we'd stayed at for about 4 days, called Verrucchio, and we had a rest period there. Whilst at Verrucchio, I'd met a senorita called Flora who played the accordion. So being a ukulele player and an entertainer, I got to know her, and she played the accordion for me. And for the first time in my life, I heard things like Monte Chardas. And she couldn't believe that I didn't know these songs. All I knew was Alexander's Ragtime Band and songs like that. But I made a friend of her, and then... when we came back to this area, and we, almost to that area, I should say, we went back to a place called San Clemente, which was fairly close to Verrucchio, and the colonel gave us permission to put on the show, the battalion show, at the theatre at Morciano. So I thought about this girl, this Flora, and Captain Wright went with me in a pickup and we went and saw her, and we brought her back each night to perform in our concert. And years later, I was able to meet an Italian who had actually seen us through the window picking up this girl. So I was very pleased about that. And we put on the show at Mochiano.
Hallett was still there, presumably. Eddie.
I've got to think about this now. I'm not sure whether Eddie was there or not. I know we did the show, but I have a feeling he wasn't there because he might have said something about Flora. But I know we were still making up songs whenever we could, and some of the songs that we probably sang there could have been some of these. So remembering that about the mountains, everlasting mountains, we never saw the end of them, we did songs like this. Let's take another hill before they relieve us. Let's do some battle drill that won't fatigue us. Let's make one more attack. Let's kill a few more foes. Let every man do or dare. Too late, the relief is here. And now we've got to go. Oh, what a pity. And now we've got to go. Captain, Captain, please tell us, do, where's that div objective now? Once through the Gothic line, you said we'd done. But ever since we kept the Hun on the run. When we jebble bash, when we have a mash, we keep asking, is it inside at last? Oh, Captain, Captain, please tell us, do, where's that div objective now? Let's go and stunk it. Where's that div objective now? Could it be Burma? Where's that div objective now? I'm singing all these without even thinking. They're just coming to me. Yeah. We're all singing songs to show how brilliant and brave we were, and to cheer the lads up. And one of them went like this. Look out, Jerry, here we come, right back where we started from. Those mortars, they caught us on that afternoon. We'll wreck 'em and check 'em. It goes. Those mortars, they caught us, but now you're fine. We'll wreck 'em and check 'em, stick a bayonet into their behind. The line will never live, 'cause we're a good old fighting div. We'll show 'em what we learnt at Tel Aviv. Look out, Jerry, here we come. Of course, you know what we did at Tel Aviv, brothels and all that. It's all Mickey taking, isn't it, of ourselves, like? Yeah. And following Lady Astor's remarks about the D-Day judges, referring to us, we sang the song that everybody was singing that went, we're the D-Day judges out in Italy, always on the Vino and always on the spree. Eighth Army Skivers and some Yanks, Fifth Armored Div with all their tanks, for we're the D-Day judges way out in Italy. Oh, Lady Astor, we hope that you'll hear this. Standing on your platform and sprouting loads of rubbish. We know that you're the nation's pride, and that your mouth's too fucking wide. That's from the D-Day Dodgers way out in Italy. Look around the mountains in the sludge and rain. You'll see rows of crosses and some without a name. The boys that lie beneath them slumber on. For them their toils and cares are done. They were the D-Day Dodgers in sunny Italy.